RNN.
For we are opposed around the world by a monolithic and ruthless conspiracy that relies primarily on covert means.
Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel.
Tonight's featured show is Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Kelby. And tonight we are going to get a very spot-on update on what's been happening at the trials in Las Vegas, at the Bundy trials. And tonight we have a special guest on our show, John Lamb. John was on with me a couple of weeks ago on the other network. We're doing a program with Micro Effect Network, and I asked John if he would come back and be on our show tonight because I know a lot of our listeners are familiar with John and wanted to hear the update on what's been going on in Las Vegas. And with that, John, I welcome you to the show. I believe that Shauna Cox is going to be on with us as well. She is going to try to get on a little bit later. She had a busy schedule, and she was going to try to be on the call as well. So, John, we'll start with you, and kind of give our listeners a little bit of your background again and why you've been following these trials so closely and have literally given your life up for to be at the trials so that you can see what's going on.
Thanks, Dan, again for having me. I live here in Bozeman, Montana, or actually out in the country from there, but Bozeman is my nearest town, and I have a large family of 11 children. I do organic farming and little odd jobs here and there, from carpenter work to everything, and it's just seeing the Bundys, what's happening to them. Just hits home to me for the rights of people being taken away every day. From seeing people like in my own backyard, Joe Robertson going to prison for digging a pond. I just could not sit still no more and idly watch all this happen. I had to see if I could do something, be at least a voice to speak up against this government overreach that I felt that was happening. And so since the last 2 years, I've been following the trials all the way from Oregon and now in Nevada, and I report on them every single day of the trial, trying to keep everybody informed and updated on what's happening. I think it's been a big asset for the American people, because it, otherwise the mainstream media is not reporting on it. And I felt that it was fair that everybody should know what is happening to these guys, whether we're having good days or bad days. And that's something we've been having a lot of the last couple of weeks, is a lot of good days. I don't know how much people are aware right now on what just happened the last few days, but seven more of the political prisoners just got released. And it was a big miracle. We're in the middle of this trial here in Las Vegas, where Clive and Bundy, Ammon Bundy, Ryan Bundy, and Ryan Payne are being tried. And this is the third trial there in Las Vegas. So many things have been disclosed and uncovered that Judge Gloria Navarro was forced to release most all of these defendants. And that was the biggest miracle. And so just before we had a long break here, she ordered it, and Ryan Bundy was released first, and then his brother, Ammon Bundy, and then Ryan Payne. and then followed was Dave Bundy, Mel Bundy, Jason Woods, and Joe O'Shaughnessy. All of those guys were released on house arrest. Some of them haven't even been to trial yet, don't even have a trial date set. But the guys that are in trial, they are at least getting to be home while they're in trial, and it's been a big blessing and a miracle for all these guys to get released at this time.
Well, John, I know that when we talked a couple of weeks ago, you had kind of told me that things are coming out now that the government's been doing that have been certainly, from everybody's standpoint, considered illegal, if certainly not at least unethical. And they've covered up a lot of information. The previous trial judges have not allowed evidence that should have been allowed. And now there's a different, kind of a different mood and a different trial atmosphere. And that's only happened over maybe, what, the last month or so, right?
Yes, definitely. The last two trials that the legal teams we had at that time really struggled to get a lot of this evidence out. And it was being denied by this same judge. And they tried over and over again, even with the threat of sanctions against their licenses for these attorneys. And it was just a big struggle. And these attorneys we have now have uncovered some things that the prosecutors have been hiding for the last 2 years. And with that, the judge had no other choice but to start releasing these guys because the prosecutors were found lying. They were found literally hiding evidence, hiding video cam footage, shredding papers, documents. One of the biggest things was is the prosecutors have said the last 2 years there were never no snipers pointing guns at women and children at the Bundy Ranch. In 2014, we knew that there were all along because we knew we had the video footage of that, and that was just uncovered. These attorneys were able to produce that to the judge and prove that there were snipers, and these things did happen as all these protesters were saying all along.
Mm-hmm. Well, and wasn't there evidence put forward that there were actually sniper teams and video surveillance happening at the Bundy Ranch long before the actual incidents out there, that they had kind of set this thing up? The government had obviously been planning this for some time, and they did it in a way that, under any normal circumstances, no one would consider just an innocent overextension or abuse of their government powers. But in reality, they were setting this thing up for a very long time, and that came out at the trial as well. Can you tell our listeners about some of the things that they were doing in advance of actually the actual confrontation there?
That was over a month prior to the actual so-called confrontation. So the government doesn't even consider a month prior part of the crime scene, per se. The crime, alleged crime, that the prosecutors are charging them with start around April 12th of 2014. Back in March, the first part of March, the BLM and FBI set up multiple, not just one, multiple sniper teams surrounding the Bundy Ranch. And they had 2 and 3 man sniper teams that were positioned above the Bundy Ranch. They had surveillance cameras with lasers on them, high-tech surveillance equipment. that were set up that could even take pictures of Clive and Bundy on the phone with inside of his house. So this wasn't no cheap equipment. This was high-tech stuff that the FBI brought in. This was a month prior. This is before there was any threat, any perceived threat at all. No one had even had words back and forth yet or anything. And this was set up all around. This wasn't just set up in one location. This was set up in multiple locations.
Right, right. Well, and you also mentioned that there were, that the BLM had asked the FBI to do a threat assessment of the Bundys to determine how big a threat they were, and that the FBI actually came back with an assessment that they were no threat at all, and that the BLM had actually thrown that out and come back with their own finding that said they were a huge threat. Could you tell our listeners about that?
That's exactly right. This is a month prior, a little bit longer, that the BLM was trying to figure out their threat assessment of the Bundys, whether they were going to be a danger or a threat. And the FBI themselves came back that the Bundys were no threat. So this threat assessment just disappeared in thin air. We, or the defense team, thought it should be there because there was wording here and there, but they couldn't find this threat assessment. And the prosecutors, for the last couple of years, have claimed that that threat assessment didn't exist, that it wasn't there. Well, as we started bringing witnesses for witness number one, witness number two, witness number three, we started questioning these witnesses on the stand there here just a couple of weeks ago. These witnesses knew of that threat assessment, and they testified under oath of that threat assessment. Until these witnesses testified, the prosecutors have claimed that it did not exist and refused to give it over. The day that we uncovered it through these witnesses, these government witnesses, the judge ordered the prosecutors to turn that threat assessment over within hours. Even at one point, she gave the prosecutors 1 hour over lunch break to turn this discovery over, to turn this threat assessment over to the defense team, which they did. It was a 15-page threat assessment that literally claimed the Bundys were no threat. But the BLM claimed all along, and so did the prosecutors, that the Bundys were a threat, and they've kept them in jail for over 2 years because of a missing threat assessment that they have lied about.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing. Shauna, did you come on the call? No, it doesn't sound like she made it on. We originally had Judy Boyle scheduled to be on this call as well, and Judy could not make it because she was tied up with a legislative program that she was doing through the Idaho State Legislature on water rights, and she just couldn't get away from that. But one of the things that came up a couple of weeks ago when we were talking is that Judy Boyle and the Idaho State Legislature had actually written and signed with the majority of the Idaho State Legislature, had signed a letter to Jeff Sessions requesting that he get involved with this trial and also requesting that they turn the defendants loose because they felt that there was a huge miscarriage of justice. And, John, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, you know, something is going on here because the trials changed so much in the last month or so. And that really happened after Judy Boyle and the Idaho State Legislature contacted Jeff Sessions. And I don't know if you have anything you would like to comment on that, but it certainly seems like things have really, really changed in the last month.
Well, I definitely seems like we should give them some credit because those legislators in Idaho have worked tirelessly, and there's also Representative Moon, and like you said, Judy Boyle, those have been leading the way there in Idaho because of some of the defendants that are from Idaho. They have felt that their own citizens of Idaho have been abused, and they have got on the ball and really have worked hard. And we've got some of them in Nevada that have done the same thing. But Idaho has really stepped above and beyond of any of the other legislators from any of our other states that I have seen so far. They had 54 signatures, if I remember right, 54 of them mm-hmm. that were, and they sent that over to session, and they wanted something done. And it appears that we got something done because of what they've done. So we got to give those legislators and Judy Boyle a clap for sure, because they did an awesome job.
Yeah, I can't help but think it has had some impact. And when they initially approached Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, and they did it through Raul Labrador, who is the congressman for state of Idaho that represents them. Raul Labrador is on the Judicial Committee, and he approached Attorney General Sessions himself and said that he really wanted him to look into this. And when he did that, he was really surprised by the fact that Jeff Sessions said this is the first he'd even heard of any attempts to contact him about the Mundy defendants. And he said he had never seen anything from any of the Idaho legislators, and they had sent several letters. So it tells me that, you know, the deep state in Washington, that the Attorney General's office, there are obviously some holdovers from the previous administration that are keeping a lot of this information away from the Attorney General. And I think maybe this whole disclosure really kind of opened some of that up. And I'm surmising at this point, because there's no way to prove any of that. But obviously something has changed in the way that the courts are looking at these defendants, and it's actually starting to look like maybe they're there to actually be a legitimate judicial body and a legitimate defender of people instead of in defense of the government. And I'm just thrilled to see this sort of thing happening, John. Can you tell our listeners some of the things that have been going on, some of the disclosures that you've seen in the last couple of weeks, and maybe give the listeners a little bit of an idea how much that's changed from what happened when we had the same things going on in that Oregon court?
Well, we've had in the Oregon court, the first trial, we had pretty much the same legal team as we do now for Aaron Bundy. And that was Morgan Philpott, you know, Marcus Mumford, and Rick Kerber. Those three there are from Utah, and they came all the way over to Oregon and helped win a full acquittal for the seven there in Oregon, which one of those seven was Shauna Cox and Ryan Bundy and Ammon Bundy, and there was four other defendants. They have taken on the same strategies pretty much here, and they have fought the prosecutors hard, where the other defense attorneys up until now really haven't had the means to do so. They didn't know the full case. They were other defendants besides them, you know, the leaders per se, so it kind of gave them a disadvantage, where Ammon Bundy and Cliven and Ryan, being the so-called leaders, they get to the core and the heart of the case right away, which is the Constitution, which is the land rights, and which is it's this case should have been heard first. We get to we've got to bring up the water rights, which have never been able to be brought up before. The discussed on when Cliven. His family first moved there to to Bunkerville, Nevada, which was in 1877. This was never before got to talk about. It, why did, you know, talk about the cows and the cows being killed by the BLM and the water line being destroyed. 11 trash bags full of documents was shredded by the BLM. All this stuff was hidden from the first jurors. And this, now we're getting to bring it out and talk about it for once, which is what should have happened all along. Eric Parker and Scott Drexler, they were not allowed a defense in their case. Judge Gloria Navarro ordered that anyone who took up arms against the federal government did not have a right to self-defense either in court. And so it just was a very fair, very unfair last two trials. And that has totally turned around with what we have going on now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty amazing that things have changed as much as they have. I know that you had mentioned when you were on the show last winter that even if you mentioned the Constitution in court, that judge in Oregon would hold you in contempt of court and subject to arrest or a big fine just to mention the Constitution.
She wouldn't even let the defendants hold up a pocket Constitution in front of the jurors. Literally, the Constitution was hidden from the jurors every which way possible. It was, you couldn't hardly even mumble the word Constitution. This time, Ryan Bundy gave an hour and a half lecture on the Constitution to the jurors and even used one of the government's own witnesses to expound on the Constitution. This witness was an attorney. He worked for the federal government for 34 plus years. He was very knowledgeable as an attorney. So there was no better witness than that witness there than to talk about the Constitution. And Ryan got to expound on it for an hour and a half.
That's amazing. And he, I did read his complete statement. They had published that complete statement, and it was powerful. He has really become an excellent attorney in his own right during his incarceration. Obviously, he's been studying the law a great deal, and, you know, his statement was fantastic.
It definitely was. Yeah, he's been in solitary confinement about half of the time he's been in jail, and he has done nothing but study the law, study the Constitution, preparing for this trial right here. And he's done an excellent job. And I wouldn't want to have any other attorney for me if I had a choice than Ryan Bundy himself. He's done very well for himself.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty amazing. And, well, tell us about Cliven and his situation at this point now. He's still under incarceration, am I correct?
He is. He's the only one out of all of the guys that were left in jail or waiting on trial or in trial without bond. And Cliven was given a chance to have pretrial release along with all of the other guys. Cliven denied and turned that down. And I was in the courtroom when he did that. It was a sad moment, but he chose to stay in jail until he's a free man. He said when he walks out of this courthouse or out of this prison, he will no longer be detained or held anywhere. And so he refused to sign the pretrial release papers. And he also wears jail scrubs every day of court. So I have not got to see him dressed in a suit or dressed in civilian-type clothes during this trial. It's been in a orange jumpsuit that's provided by the prison.
Hmm. Well, I think maybe his decision there is a good decision because, in fact, you know, when even when some of these defendants were found not guilty in previous trials, they just put them back through the court system and tried them again. And I know there was certainly a number of those defendants that had actually been through two trials and were facing a third trial. And apparently the court came to an accommodation with them, but there were some certain things that they had to agree to, or they had to admit to. Can you give us a little bit of background on that?
Yeah, the pretrial release is not just easy. There's a lot of restrictions, such as like Ammon Bundy has 24-hour house arrest. He's not allowed to leave the house that he's at except for court, doctor appointments, or lawyer, legal appointments. And that's it. So other than that, he is confined to that house. All of these guys have an ankle monitor that they're wearing, and it's on 24 hours a day. They're tracked everywhere they go. So they have to be on time. They're on a real strict schedule. So when they leave that house to go to court, they have limited amount of time to get from that house to court or from that house to where their lawyer's appointments are. So it's not real easy. It's way better than the jail. But Cliven did not want to put himself under that strict supervision, failure to mess up. He just said he would rather just sit in jail, and when he's found innocent, that's when he'll walk out. But the rest of the guys, that's what they're having to deal with, each one of them, and there's seven of them around the country now.
Well, I know one of the things that they were talking about with the, you know, the release that they've got is the fact that at any point they can relinquish that release. Am I correct with that? I mean, the government or the judge can say they're back under arrest, and I think that's what Cliven was concerned about. He just wants to get it over with and be done with it. Is there? Let me ask you this: are there any repercussions that you're aware of against any of these government folks that have done some of this collusion, some of these government folks that have destroyed documents and that have lied openly on the stand about facts? Is there anything, any kind of repercussions against them? Or are they going to just walk away scot-free no matter what kind of crap they pull?
Well, there hasn't been any repercussions yet, but we definitely feel there's going to be. This last witness, he's a BLM officer, Agent Felicis. He has been caught lying under oath, also officer BLM Officer Johnson. So those two there, we have plans on impeaching them at a later date here. The way this process works is a little bit slow. They're actually the government's witness at this point. And so once the government is done bringing their witnesses forth, then we will impeach them when we start bringing witnesses. And that is on the record that we're going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So they know it's going to happen. It's just a matter of time when it is going to happen.
And have you heard anything more about the FBI agent that was, let's say there were some charges against him on the Lavoie Finicum murder? Have you heard anything more about any of that?
Nothing new, except they do have a trial date set for him, and that trial date now has been set off as up until May of 2018, and that is the third time it got pushed off. It was going to be set for the first week in February of 2018, but it just got changed again until May. He does have multiple felony charges. If he was found guilty, I understand, on all charges, he he would get 30 years in prison.
Is he being held? Is he being imprisoned, or is he just out walking around on the street?
That is the sad part. He never spent one day in jail. He is walking down the street, and he actually is still working as an FBI agent.
Well, I was going to say that's amazing. That shows the double standard, because here the people that are being tried, the Bundys, and the people that have been tried in that, they've literally been found not guilty on virtually every charge, and yet look how much prison time they've had, and they've been held in some cases without bail, and they've been held in a way that really, you know, goes way, way beyond what would be considered normal and reasonable.
It definitely does. It's definitely double standard. We've got him, but he's not lost a day's worth of pay or work. He continues to work prosecuting people, investigating people when he has a serious, very, very serious charges himself, which are not just misdemeanors, they're felony charges. And he's got a trial, and he's still continued to work, and he's continued to walk the streets. If it was any civilian, that would never, ever happen to any of us.
Right, right. Well, and that's kind of, I guess my point is that they've obviously got a very, very, very much a double standard in the way they approach the justice in trying people and prosecuting people.
If I was working at McDonald's, I'd have probably been fired at the charges this guy's got. And now he's working for a agency that you have to have clearance. And, you know, you had to pass a background check. And obviously now, you know, he wouldn't pass a background check at this moment with the charges that he's got.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and obviously we saw the same kind of situation happen before with federal employees that do these things. They kind of have pretty much a free pass on their illegal activities. We've talked about that certainly with the Clintons and the Obamas and, you know, so many of the illegal things that have happened at the very highest echelons of our government. And they just get away with it and get a free pass no matter how awful what they're doing happens to be. But they can sure go after some rancher out in the middle of Nevada because he doesn't want to give up his BLM lease without a fight. And all I can tell you is that I just hope God will continue to bless America when we've got these kind of creeps at the reins of power in our government. I hope he really understands that it's the people that need to be blessed and not these jerks. So, I'm proselytizing a little bit there, but John, you followed this thing right down the line. You've been there literally for two solid years. What does the wrap up on this last trial tell us what the schedule is and what you see happening once they reconvene? Now they're on break right now, aren't they?
They are. They're on break this whole week. We've had no courts, and so we go back to court this coming Monday, December 11th, and we will have court for 4 days, Monday through Thursday. We will also have court the following week, Monday through Thursday. So we'll have 8 days of court before Christmas. And then we go on another long break, and we won't go back to court until January the 2nd. And it's been hard to predict this case. And normally we can kind of predict it. We know our witnesses are coming. We know we have numerous witnesses that the government's going to call. Anything could happen right this moment in this trial. That's what the ups and downs on this trial here. We might have court 4 days, and we might get a dismissal. Anything could happen. We know that there's a lot of things happening behind the scenes. Just because we've had this long last week off doesn't mean the defense attorneys have had off. They've been filing motions. They've been working around the clock, getting prepared for when we go back to court this coming Monday. And I know there's some great big surprises in store for everyone. We'll see how the judge and the prosecutors handle this. But it's going to be some pretty exciting days. We don't want to, if you're out there, you don't want to miss any of it, because every day is going to be a new day. And there's going to be some things that are going to be uncovered yet. That's going to shock everybody. So I know I'm looking forward to getting back to court. And if normally these court cases, you know, are kind of boring and scary, and you just never know the prosecutors are prosecuting, you know. But that's been the case here. The defense team has been prosecuting the prosecutors from day one this last month. And that's what's been keeping you on the edge of your seat, because every day there's something new happening.
Well, you know, and that's kind of what we were talking about earlier, but that's the whole new complexion of this particular trial is the fact that for the first time, the defense attorneys have been allowed to bring forth evidence of government collusion and government lying and things that during the previous trials, they didn't have any opportunity to do that. And I can't help but think that that is really a result of some intervention by the Attorney General's office. At least that's, you know, that's just my opinion now. But it just seems to me like everything has changed a lot over the last, you know, the last month. And I'm just hopeful that Judy Boyle and her efforts in that regard have finally gotten to the ears of our very top prosecutor and the Attorney General. And let's hope it works. So, John, would you tell our, maybe tell our listeners some of the things that that are going on with the Las Vegas group that kind of haven't been very well covered by the press, and I'm going to get into some of the things like the gun issues and stuff like that, because I think a lot of us were really concerned that this Las Vegas shooting, which in my mind doesn't smell right, but that it was going to be something that was going to be brought to this trial. Have you seen any evidence of that?
Oh, I definitely have from day one of this trial, which kind of resulted in a few of the guys taking early plea deals prematurely without going to trial. Pete Santilli was one of those, and he had plans to go to trial, and just days before the trial was to begin, we had that horrific shooting there in Las Vegas, which put a big damper on all of us at first. We did not know how we were going to go into this trial with all that just fresh upon the people's minds. And as we picked jurors, it was very obvious these jurors were affected by it. Multiple jurors were even on the ground when the shooting happened, were being shot at, or had a friend shot right beside them. They were hiding behind walls and inside of other types of buildings trying to get away from the shooting. And one thing we learned during just jury picking there, when we were picking the jurors, is that multiple of these jurors believe that there were multiple shooters. They had even expressed that there were multiple shooters. It even that one of the defense attorneys, when he was giving his opening arguments, brought up about multiple shooters, and there was a big cover-up in Las Vegas. it's still kept very, very silent and hush-hush. This is just blocks away from the courthouse. I literally walk right by where this shooting happened multiple times I have, and they have literally covered it up, went overboard on covering this shooting up, whatever happened.
Yeah, I agree. And we had Bram Thornton on that did one of our calls here several months ago, right after the shooting. And his son was actually shot. And he gave us a pretty good report on that. And it's been obvious since right after the shooting that there were multiple shooters. There were multiple witnesses that attested to that fact. And yet they kept coming back, the FBI reports. Oh, no, there was just one guy, you know. And of course, he was pulling off 400-yard shots and he's not a trained rifle expert, non-military, and yet he was pulling off these expert shots from 400 yards away, 28 stories up, and that's pretty far-fetched in itself.
It definitely is. There's places that there's no way that he was even in the line of fire where other people were shot at. And, there was a couple of different windows that this gentleman supposedly shot out of, but there wasn't in a direct line of fire. And so there's definitely a big cover-up. I think we got past that with these jurors. We eliminated the jurors that were concerned about the weapons and the guns. So I think we've got a good set of jurors. Overall, we've got 6 men and 6 women. It's not exactly who we wanted, but I think we're working with them, and they're listening. They're sitting on the edge of their seats. They know that this is not about guns like the government was wanting to portray. No one got shot at the Bundy Ranch. The ones that were pointing guns at people were the BLM, were the FBI sniper teams. And that's been very, very clear from day one in this trial. So it wasn't a bunch of gunmen that attacked the BLM and attacked federal officers. That did never happen.
Right, right. And the only death that occurred in all of this was literally an ambush and obvious murder of Lavoie Finicum, who wasn't brandishing a weapon, had his arms in the air, and he was shot in the back 3 times. So needless to say, the government didn't come out on this whole thing looking really, really hot. They're kind of looking like maybe finally, you know, all the crap that they've gotten away with, finally maybe people are waking up and realizing that there's a lot more here than what the government's been telling us.
Exactly. If you think about all the people that were there at the Bundy Ranch, the government claims they have pictures of 47 different individuals with guns and over 500 protesters in one area, right in the Wash area. Not one single gunshot was fired by any civilian. Not one single person, accidentally misfired or shot themselves or shot somebody else. The only one that got shot out of this whole ordeal was hundreds of rounds fired by the FBI, and they killed Lavoie.
Mm-hmm.
So, and even with all them gunshots being fired into that truck when Shauna Cox was in it and Ryan Bundy, not one single person in that truck fired or shot back. Ryan Bundy was even shot. He still has the bullet in his arm.
I was going to ask about that. I know they were trying to force him to get that bullet removed to get rid of the evidence, so he's still carrying that bullet in his arm.
He's still carrying that bullet, and I know that there's been some rumors and talks that he's going to get it removed on his own accord since he's out right now. but I know he's probably more concerned about the trial than the bullet, but he's the FBI has tried a couple of different times on forcing him to get that removed. They even beat him up, pushed him down a flight of stairs in one of the prisons, and hauled him off to a secret hospital. And after he got there, and this was the last time, this wasn't the first time, it was just the last time, the doctor would not remove the bullet because Ryan Bundy would never give his consent. So he still carries that bullet.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Well, I'll tell you what, John, your reporting on this stuff has just been really incredible, and I applaud you for all the efforts that you've had on behalf of the American people, trying to kind of keep this whole thing before the American public so that they're aware of what's really been going on and not what the lamestream media has been portraying. And frankly, what little comes out of them seems to be real negative to the Bundys and real supportive of the government agencies. And that's why groups like ours that are trying to report the truth are so important, and why people like you who've been boots on the ground during this whole thing are really important to the whole process. You're going back then on Monday? You're going to be back there for the trial on Monday?
Yes, I'll be back Monday morning for trial. We start at 8:30 in the morning, and I will be there, and I'll be continuing reporting every day that we have court.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm in Arizona right now. I may call you, and I may join you at one of those trial days. I'd love to sit in on it myself and see, you know, what's been going on. I'd like to get kind of a firsthand feel for the whole thing. And I know the Bundys have been very, very dependent on you reporting the truth through Facebook and through your other means. Can you tell our listeners the best way to keep tabs on this stuff through you?
Yes, if they would like to follow me daily, I'm on Facebook. That's under just my name, John Lamb, out of Bozeman, Montana. And I will have at least one to two live streams every day. I did just pick up some newer equipment while I've been back here at home in Bozeman. So we'll be doing, hopefully, live on YouTube also every day. And that will be under John Lamb on YouTube or John Lamb on Facebook. So we'll have both of those going live every day about around noon from the courthouse, and around 5 o'clock, as soon as we're done, I'll do another update again at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I don't know if you've been keeping tabs on this, but apparently President Trump has decided to turn part of the Grand Staircase Escalante National Monument back to the state of Utah. Do you have any input on that? I was hoping that Shauna could get on the call, because I know she's been really involved with that. Can you give us anything?
Shauna would know more on it than I would, but I have been following it, yes. And I know that he gave back a couple hundred thousand acres just a few days ago back to the state of Utah. And it looks like there are even going to be more besides just what he did give. So it was a large section. It still wasn't as big as some of the people of Utah want given back, but it was the right step in the right direction there. And it was over 200,000 acres.
Yeah, that's just fantastic that we are starting to do things like that, because that's the first time literally in about 40 years that the so-called national monument designations have gone the other way and actually giving states' rights back state lands back to the states under state rights 10th Amendment issues, and I'm really pleased to see that. John, can you? Is there anything in particular that you'd like to bring to our listeners right now that you think they should know about things that have been going on during these trials, and things that they can get involved in, and ways that they might be able to help you as well?
You know, there's we're always trying to educate more people. We're trying to always pick up, you know, more constitutions, some pocket constitutions. If people want to, if they show up at the courthouse, you know, if they're able to pick up 20 of them or 100 of them, and come down there and pass them out. Jury nullification pamphlets is another thing. We give them away by the hundreds down there. We don't make any money on them at all. We purchase these with either donations that people donate or people that we buy them ourselves. And we believe that this is one reason we're beating these trials, and we're educating the public, is by passing out these type of literature, educating people every day. Literally hundreds of pocket constitutions and literally hundreds of jury nullification pamphlets we have been given away every single day this last 2 years, all the way from Portland to Nevada. And those are things, if you show up down there, if people are able to pick up, 100 constitutions and bring them down there to help give them out with us. A lot of times we'll make copies of the jury nullification pamphlets so we don't have to just keep ordering them over and over again. We'll make copies of them. Those things like that would help us out a ton. We've got a good group of people that have dedicated their time every day down there along in front of the courthouse, and they don't miss a day. In the last couple of years, they're out there faithfully with signs and just educating the people as they walk by. And there's no better way, no better place to educate them than right there in the, you know, downtown Las Vegas, where there's hundreds of tourists coming by every day.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of them have, I'm sure, never seen or certainly never read the U.S. Constitution. I know the issue of jury nullification. Now, you've got another gentleman from Montana that is there as well. I'd like you to tell our listeners maybe a little bit about the issue of jury nullification.
Roger Roots, is that who you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I know Roger from the state legislature. We had our representative, Bob Wagner, had a jury nullification bill before the legislature a few years ago, and Roger and I actually testified on that as well. About the need to get our citizens who are impaneled on a jury to make them aware of the fact that they have the right to consider the legality or the use of the law, and they can have the right to determine whether a law is just or not, as well as whether or not this person is guilty of violating that law.
Roger's been really good about that. He lives right here in Montana also. He lives just on the east side of Bozeman, and he has been fighting hard, advocating for jury nullification for years. He even gives speeches on it. That is one thing we're going to be having there in Las Vegas on the 16th of December. It'll be 333, the address is 333 6th Avenue, Las Vegas, Nevada. Roger's going to be giving a speech there in the evening of the 16th, and everybody's welcome. He's going to be talking about jury nullification, states' rights, water rights. We've got many speakers from around the country are going to be coming, giving other types of speeches too as well concerning this Sunday trial. That's one place that I have learned jury nullification from very well is from Roger Roots.
Yeah, he's I think probably one of the most experts, most expert people in the country on really the jury nullification issue. I'll get in touch with you, John, and you know, maybe I'll try to make it up for that that event. I am officially now that I'm in Arizona, although I've got plenty of projects and lots going on, I'm here for the winter. I may end up making that trip up there to Las Vegas so that I can sit in on one or two days of the trial, and maybe we can get a chance to visit then. But
that'd be awesome to have you.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you're doing fantastic things for the citizens of the United States of America in following all of this stuff. Are there any last thoughts that you would have, John, on really ways that people who are listeners might be able to help you besides the Constitution things? I know you've gone to a great deal of trouble to travel and all this stuff, and you've pretty much done it on your own dime. Is there a way that people could, you know, maybe help you out a little bit with some travel expenses or something?
If they would like to, that'd be awesome. I do this totally on my own. I have a little business that I'm trying to run in Montana at the same time, but I would, anything would be appreciated. I have a PayPal account that a lot of people donate, and it's on my Facebook account there. I know it's, my email address is how you can donate through there to PayPal. I'm not really good at all this, but it's, they would do John Lamb 72. .jl@gmail.com, and that will get into my PayPal account, and that's one way they can help donate if they want to help cover some of my expenses while I'm on the road. And no amount is too small. Everything is appreciated, and if they want to do that, that'd be awesome.
Okay, and that's John Lamb 72, and what was the...
The period or dot, JL@gmail.com.
JL, okay. Okay, good. All right, well, with that, I think we're really near the end of the show here, and I want to thank you, John, for all your hard work and the fact that you have really stuck your neck out to try to make sure that the American people are aware of what really is happening in these various trials. And I hope you give my best and our listeners' best to the Bundy defendants, the family, and thank you again for being on this call. And with that, Kelby, I turn the show back over to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this week's show with Connecting the Dots with Dan Happel.